From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the show. We have a lot coming on, going on in Washington, D.C. A lot of focus there, a lot of nominees coming forward, Democrats licking their wounds. We're watching the former president continue to fill out his roster after some dramatics yesterday with the customary showing up to greet the soon-to-be former president. This hour, we'll be joined by Senator Tommy Tuberville, and Senator James Lankford is standing by. And, of course, take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We're going to defend the people of this city. His threat is not just towards new arrivals and undocumented families. His threats are also against black families.
Yeah, what an idiot. This mayor of Chicago, the Trump resistance forming, and governors are taking the lead. In that case, a mayor. We discussed whether the tone, deafness of the Dems truly get the message that the people have spoken through this election.
Number two.
Wow. Kind of wonder whether he could actually get confirmed even by the House Republican conference.
We will consider this in the Senate and certainly will be in the Judiciary Committee. I don't happen to serve on that committee.
Picking a starting lineup and ruffling a lot of feathers with one of the cabinet selections as could be boxed out as Tulsi Gabbard and Rubio get their slots. And Matt Gaetz mysteriously is named to a position he more than likely won't get confirmed for. Attorney General will forecast it.
Number one.
I'm not going to go into granular detail of what was discussed in the meeting. What I can say that it was indeed very cordial, very gracious. And substantive.
Wow, that's KJP talking about Trump and Biden. A sweep. A Republican locks up the House. Republicans lock up the House. They pick their leadership in the Senate. And a great president-elect meet Donald Trump as he meets one-on-one with President Biden, who is one and done. They met in the Oval. There's going to be massive change in Washington. And we just don't know how big the gap is going to be for the Republicans in the House, because they should have about a 6-seat lead. But with Mike Waltz leaving his seat in Florida, with now Matt Gaetz already resigned his seat in Florida, and Elise Stefanik, that's 3 seats that they got to fill through special elections. Not that I think the outcome's in doubt, but it'll be at times in which they're going to be shorthanded. Senator James Lankford got elected to leadership yesterday as vice chair of the Republican Conference. He is quite happy out of Oklahoma, and he joins us now. Senator, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Brian. Good to be back with you again.
So why was it important to get the leadership position?
Well, just having the opportunity to be able to help drive some of the agenda, what we're trying to do to be able to make sure that the voice of common sense Oklahomans are being heard, quite frankly, at the leadership table, and to be able to say, what are we going to do? How are we going to get it done? How are we going to move an agenda that clearly the president has led and that American has spoken for? How are we going to get that done?
So it must be a different feel, Senator, than you've had, let's say, 2 years ago after Election Day, and certainly four.
Yeah, very, very different feel than it was 4 years ago when we were all trying to be able to figure out how bad is this going to be. And then we've experienced over the last 4 years high inflation, all the challenges, all the crazy cultural stuff that they've tried to be able to ram down Americans' throat, the cutoff of energy opportunities. I mean, there's all the things that we've experienced that we thought 4 years ago would happen did happen. And now we have a new opportunity that America's pushed back and said, that's ridiculous policies. And so America set a new agenda. And Trump is actually leading that.
Here's the exchange yesterday between the two presidents. Cut three.
Well, Mr. President-elect and the former president,
thank you.
Donald, congratulations.
Thank you.
And looking forward to having, like we said, a smooth transition. Do everything we can to make sure you're accommodated, what you need. And we're going to get a chance to talk about some of that today.
So good.
Welcome.
Thank
back.
You. And, thank you very much. And politics is tough. And it's, in many cases, not a very nice world, but it is a nice world today, and I appreciate it very much. A transition that's so smooth, it'll be as smooth as it can get, and I very much appreciate that, Jim.
You're welcome.
Were you surprised?
No, not surprised on it, other than that Joe Biden has said now for months to over a year that Donald Trump is a threat to all democracy and that we won't have a democracy or a constitution or after he comes into office. And he's been accused of being Hitler and a fascist. And then suddenly it was, well, welcome. We're working towards a smooth transition to make sure that you take the lead. So he either didn't believe that, or if he did believe it, now he suddenly changed his mind on it. It just was a very odd transition for him on that. It's not surprising to me for Donald Trump. He handled the same kind of transition before in the previous time. I do have to tell you, just watching the video clip when I saw it, seeing Donald Trump sitting in, as you're facing it, that left chair rather than a right chair does look odd because I'm so used to seeing him in the Oval Office sitting in the other chair where Joe Biden was sitting, where he will sit in after January the 20th.
What committee is he going to be on?
So still be on Homeland Security, still be on the Intelligence Committee, still be on the Finance Committee. We got a lot of work to do to be able to write all the tax policy coming out of Finance Committee. And so there's still quite a bit of work to do.
Senator, how important is it for you to be involved with border security? I mean, you've put a lot of work in there. You know, that bipartisan bill that you guys worked on was front and center through this whole election cycle.
Sure,
and
yeah,
that's going to be the president's priority. What role will you play going forward?
Yeah, still serving in leadership in the Homeland Security Committee. That bipartisan bill that we put forward had two sections of it. One section was compelling the president, President Biden, to do his job. He was cutting off funding until he actually put in place the policies that he could actually do right now that he just chose not to do. The second part of it was fixing a loophole in the asylum process that's existed for decades. So when I look at that bill now, and I've had folks that have asked me, you think President Trump's going to take that up? I was like, well, half that bill is not needed anymore. Because half the bill was compelling the president to do his job. Clearly, President Trump is going to enforce the border, so half of it's not needed. The other half will still be important at some point. But I would say I think it's going to drop off the radar initially because we'll drop from 4,000 illegal crossings a day to 500 illegal crossings a day pretty rapidly when Trump becomes president. And so it'll go off the front page of the news.
Well, why do you think it'll drop?
That last 500, we still got to be able to solve.
Well, why do you think it's going to drop that precipitously?
That number will drop precipitously because 1,500 people a day are coming under the CBP One app that President Biden is doing. President Trump will end the use of that app the very first day. Another 1,000 are coming in under what's called the CHNV, the Cuba, Haitian, Nicaragua, Venezuelan program. That program will end immediately the first day. So that's 2,500 plus people. Then they'll do greater enforcement and turnarounds, which will slow down the number of people paying cartels to come in, and we'll be back to a handful of what it was before. So, yeah, the very first day, I think the numbers will drop dramatically just because of executive actions that the president can take to stop it.
Senator Lankford, what is left of the wall that was paid for in 2020 that was just laying in the desert?
Well, there are still some sections on that are in Texas and a couple other spots, so those can be installed. Interestingly enough, in the last few months, President Biden has actually started installing and closing some of those areas. I was down in Arizona just about 3 weeks ago along the border and saw some of the installation that's actually happening there. So quietly, the Biden administration started actually doing that.
Really?
Again, so that's helpful. But he also, as you know, Biden also sold off some of the steel for just pennies on the dollar. And so some of that's going to have to be repurchased by the American people to be able to close other sections.
So when it comes to these confirmations, it'll go through the Judiciary Committee first. That's not a committee you're on, right?
It's not. Well, it depends on what it is. So, for instance, Tulsi Gabbard with what we call the ODNI, the Office of Department of National Intelligence, that will actually come through the Intelligence Committee that I serve on. But like Matt Gaetz, he will go through the Judiciary Committee because that's actually the Committee of Jurisdiction for the Department of Justice.
Here's what Senator Fetterman said about Matt Gaetz, cut 15.
Well, I put out a tweet about it. I mean, clearly, it's just kind of like a God tier kind of trolling, just to trigger a meltdown. But really, the Dems' opinions on Gaetz, that's not really what's interesting. What to me is interesting the good ones are going to come by my colleagues on the other side, the GOP, on how they can justify voting for that jerk.
So I don't know how you feel about Matt Gaetz, but he doesn't really have the highest approval rating amongst your caucus. What do you think his chances are?
Yeah, I think we're going to take him through the process just like we do everything else. We take President Trump's selection seriously. If he is picking someone and saying, hey, I want them on my team, we're going to take them through the process. They'll go. He'll go through that process like everybody else. Well, whether it's Marco Rubio that we work side by side on or whether it's Matt Gaetz, both of them were announced yesterday. The response of both of them is exactly the same. Let's get them through the confirmation process. Let's make sure they're getting a fair hearing as fast as we possibly can.
All right, so Senator Tommy Tuberville is going to be my guest in a little while. He said that the senators have no business voting against nominees from the president. Do you believe that?
No, I think the Senate does have a constitutional responsibility called advice and consent. President Biden didn't get all of his nominees. There were some Democrats that opposed his nominees as well and said, hey, this person we don't think is qualified. If you go back 8 years ago, President Trump, there were a few nominees that Republicans even in those first couple of years looked at and said, hey, we're not sure this person's qualified. And then the president was able to put somebody in place. What we're not going to do is block the president from be able to get somebody in place and to be able to get the job done on that. That's the important part on it. But the Senate still has a constitutional role to be able to play, and we should be able to engage to be able to do that. But quite frankly, the first responsibility is to get going. A lot of these nominations have taken forever. We should start this literally January the 3rd, as soon as we're sworn in, immediately start meeting in the hearings and to start taking off to make sure it's ready for January 20th when the president's in place.
Well, I know that. Before I get to that, how do you feel about reconciliation appointments?
Oh, about doing the recess appointments in between? Yeah, the recess appointments is a constitutional thing to do, but the Supreme Court spoke on this just 10 years ago. Because remember, President Obama was trying to slide in a bunch of folks with recess appointments. The Supreme Court stepped in and said, hey, you can't just randomly do this on a weekend kind of thing, saying Congress is not here for the weekend, so I'm going to put people in. There are boundaries to it. That is a sign that the Senate is not getting their job done. If you have to do a recess appointment thing, the Senate first should do its job and actually speed up, make sure that we're staying longer hours, longer days to be able to actually make sure the work is getting done.
Would you discourage the president from doing that?
Yeah, the hard part with a recess appointment is they're always short term. They only last 2 years. And then that's all that they can actually get. And you're always going to have a legal challenge. Remember Chad Wolf, when he came in as the head of DHS, he was never confirmed in the process, was not actually walked through that process, and Democrats wouldn't do that. So the challenge that we had was several things that Chad Wolf had ruled on, then got kicked out in the courts later on, saying, hey, there wasn't a confirmed nominee for that.
Because he's acting.
So,
wow.
Because he's acting, that's right. So you've got to kind of balance these things out. You can try to move them in with speed, but they may be sitting in the chair but may not have the power that they need to really get things done.
So how are things going to be different with Senator Thune, being that he works so close with McConnell? A lot of people feel as though McConnell was getting in the way of the president's agenda. How are things going to be different with Thune?
I would say Thune and McConnell are two different people. Yes, they both worked on the leadership team, but they are two very different people. Thune has both served in the House and in the Senate. He knows both bodies very well. He's done a bunch of different positions in leadership. So this is kind of like somebody that owns a restaurant that's also worked as a waiter and a busboy and a cook. They kind of know every role there. He served as a committee chair. He knows how to move legislation. And people forget this. John Thune voted with President Trump 91% of the time if you go back to 4 years ago. He's one of the top people that voted for President Trump's agenda 4 years ago. They give him a hard time for some of the things that he might have said. Everybody has disagreements at different points. That's what leaders do. They push on each other to be able to make each other better. But when you actually look at his voting record, he was overwhelmingly supportive of President Trump's agenda 4 years ago. And I think that's one of the big reasons that as soon as Thune was actually elected by our conference, President Trump put out that Truth Social post in strong support of Thune and said, hey, looking forward to us working together. Thune gets stuff done fast. And so there was a very strong statement there from the president of support for Thune.
So the thing is, the minority seems to slow things down. This is what it was explained to me. Well, we don't work Mondays. We don't work Fridays. And we might just say, well, you know, we're not going to really hear any nominees or until maybe the afternoon on Wednesday. And then how many nominees you're actually going to see. And then after you get the hearings, you got to vote on them. Then you got to put them to the floor. So there's ways the minority can slow you down. How do you overcome that?
Well, first things first, let's meet, let's get going on it. If they start trying to slow things down, then we can put our own pressure on the minority. That's the thing about the Senate, is that the Senate, most everything runs by consent. Both sides have got to look at each other, work out our differences like grown-ups, and then to be able to get stuff done. So I fully expect Democrats will throw a fit on some of these different folks that are coming through through the nomination process. They'll do what they can to be able to slow it down. But Thune at that point has the power to be able to control the schedule. And so he can just say, we're going to work through the weekends. We're going to work longer times. We're going to put up 20 nominations in a day. I mean, there are things that he can just be able to keep pressing us to be able to grind through it, to be able to get it done.
So you're convinced that how many can you get done by inauguration?
Well, we'll have to have the president inaugurated. We can do a lot of the hearings behind the scenes, but to actually start bringing them up and try to confirm them, we'll confirm them as soon as the president's actually in place. So that gives us 2 weeks to do some of those nominations. There are about 1,200 people, Brian. There's a lot of people that have to go through the process on it. So the priority will be things like Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, all your national security folks. Those will be the primary folks that will come up, and then we'll start working through the rest of the top cabinet people, then the deputies in the cabinet, and then you just take off and go from there. And as soon as we can get a gap, then we start working on judges.
All right. Senator, thanks so much for your time. I look forward to you making a real impact on the way in. And I see the president tweeted out congratulating all you guys on your leadership positions. Thanks so much.
You bet. Glad to do it. Let's get some work done.
You got it. I think it's Truth Social. I got to be correct about that. He put it on Truth Social. Hey, listen, I'll take some calls now. What is your opinion about the roster that's taking shape? 1-866-408-7669. Don't move.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade from the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So today, President Biden met with President-elect Trump for approximately 2 hours in the Oval Office. White House Chief of Staff Jeff Zients and incoming Chief of Staff Susie Wiles joined the meeting. It was a substantive meeting, an exchange of views. They discussed important national security and domestic policy issues facing the nation and the world.
Well, that was KJP. I'm somewhat surprised that they seem to get along or talk about issues. And now President Biden's going to be going over to meet with President Xi of China. Maybe he asked Trump, what do you want me to relay to him? I would love that. He said, listen, you got to continue to fund Ukraine. And I know they want to keep all their climate projects together. You know, they want America to write a $1 trillion check every year to different climate projects. Forget it. We're not doing it. Justin in New Mexico. Hey, Justin.
How you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, so I like every pick that Donald Trump's made. You know, no one's perfect, considering Matt Gaetz. But, you know, that's what happens when you get people in there that won't do what you ask them to do. So you end up, you know, you got to get somebody that's going to do what you ask. But I just hope Donald Trump does, you know, the reason I vote for him for so he can get rid of income tax. So that's what I'm pulling for. So all these people, I hope they do what he wants. So
well, I'll tell you what, he's going to give additional tax breaks. I don't know if there's a plan in place to get rid of the income tax, but he's going to be – I love the fact that he's going to bring people in instead of cutting programs. Maybe he's got to do some cutting programs, but I think he's going to bring people in to make it a more efficient government, and that's what we need. He's going to unleash Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy. I think that's going to help. And then you get growth with the energy sector and reinforcing the border. And you'd make this huge effort to bring manufacturing back. And on top of that, you get that corporate tax rate down to 15 if companies want to stay here and stays at 21 if they don't. Listen, that's a big incentive. Remember, they were beginning to come back to this country before the pandemic, and then everything went on hold. Let's see what happens when that tax reform gets, re-upped. Brian Kilmeade Show, Senator Tommy Tuberville next.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Senator Tommy Tuberville, he said that the senators have no business voting against nominees from the president. Do you believe that?
No, I think the Senate does have a constitutional responsibility called advice and consent. President Biden didn't get all of his nominees. There were some Democrats that opposed his nominees as well and said, hey, this person we don't think is qualified. If you go back 8 years ago, President Trump, there were a few nominees that Republicans even in those first couple of years looked at and said, hey, we're not sure this person's qualified. And then the president was able to put somebody in place. What we're not going to do is block the president from being able to get somebody in place and to be able to get the job done on that. That's the important part on it.
Senator James Lankford weighing in on okaying and soon they're going to be confirming a lot of Donald Trump's picks, or at least certainly examining and questioning a lot of Donald Trump's picks, many of which are unconventional, all of which I have huge upsides. The big controversial is Matt Gaetz, obviously. He has already resigned from the House. Soon Mike Waltz is going to do the same thing. Elise Stefanik is not going to be able to serve. She's going to go. I'm sure he's going to get confirmed to be the U.N. ambassador. And now we have Matt Gaetz is another. So we'll see where this goes. Senator Tommy Tuberville joins us now out of Alabama. So, Senator, I just wanted to do you not believe that were you quoted correctly? Did you not believe that you could reject any nominee?
Oh, you can reject it. But why would we? You know, the American people, Brian, gave a mandate last week that, hey, we want to change our country back. Now, I don't understand why any senator would vote on the Republican side against any nominee that President Trump has. He's got to change this country around. He's got to have help doing it. There hadn't been one vote since I've been here from the Democrats that voted against any of the nominees for President Biden. And if you look at Merrick Garland, you know, he was the worst AG ever, Brian. Okay, listen to this. He weaponized the DOJ. He went after parents that wanted to control their kids in schools and not union teachers. He tried to arrest Donald Trump three times, and he okayed the raid in Mar-a-Lago. And we had 20 Republican senators, including one you just had on the air, that said, oh, yeah, I'm voting for Merrick Garland. He was against the Constitution. He broke the law. And my God, what are these people thinking?
One thing about Garland, though, I mean, it wouldn't be your pick, but he was qualified. It's just what it wouldn't be your pick to do it. But if you look at his resume, he was qualified. Do you think Matt Gaetz is qualified to be Attorney General?
100%. 100%. He's probably one of the better voices in the House. He is I've known him for more than the time that I've been up here. He is straight up American. He believes in the Constitution. He's going to fight for the Constitution. He's going to fight for this country. And I want to challenge any of these people that have voted for any of these people on the left, and which there were a lot on the Republican side, to give their reasoning why they voted for some of these people that have absolutely tried to destroy our country. It makes no sense. It's time to take it back.
So one Republican senator, granted anonymity, told Fox News Digital he's not going to get confirmed. Another one said the same thing. Lisa Murkowski said he's not a serious candidate. Joni Ernst says he's got his work cut out for him. So you think he's got to start selling himself to these doubters?
Yeah, well, he's going to need to come over and go through the Judiciary Committee. But you got all these wannabes over here that think they know everything about what's going on. And look, a lot of these people have been up here for the last 15, 20 years, Brian. We're $36 trillion in debt. Our country's in trouble. And they voted for most of these people that have made the changes with the Democratic Party to bring our country down. They need to check their whole card. They need to understand, wait a minute. Now, I might be thinking of the wrong way here. Exactly. Let's take our country back and help President Trump. He was elected. Let's give him his assistant coaches that he's going to need to get our country on the right track again, because we are in trouble.
Have you ever seen him happier than he has been over the last week?
No, I hadn't. I tell you, I was with him down there on the night he elected. I was the first senator who came out for him. And most of these people that you're talking to, he can't win. Let's go. Let's make sure we try to get somebody else. And, of course, the closer he got, the better he got, the more popular he got. They saw he's going to win. They all jumped on the bandwagon. So he's going to have problems. He's going to have problems from the House and from the Senate of getting people confirmed. But people got to make their voices heard. I mean, it just you know, if you're going to vote for your opinion and not for people in your state, I voted for Rick Scott to be leader of the Senate because I got hammered from the people of Alabama. I represent them. I don't represent anybody else. And I'm going to vote how they want me to vote. And they want President Trump to have his coaching staff in line here in the very near future to take this country back.
Yeah, I guess he's a friend of yours. I can't see him as the most qualified person to be attorney general. I know the president's got to have someone watch his back, but you think of Matt Whitaker, he's already done it. I mean, as acting attorney general.
Yeah. Well, hey, let me tell you something. There's a lot of people that's qualified, but you know, President Trump, the head coach, picked Matt Gaetz. He picked Matt Gaetz. That's his prerogative to do that. He was elected president.
Right.
Now, I know a lot of those people that would have loved to have it. I know a lot of people on this list that I'm looking at right here, Republican senators, begging, please take me, be attorney general. That ain't going to happen. He's going to pick somebody this time that's going to stand behind him. Remember, the guy that I beat for this Senate seat, Jeff Sessions, was the guy he picked last time. He's not going to – and Jeff Sessions is a good guy, but he wasn't the strongest that would just step out there and say, no, we're not doing this. President Trump is going to need all the protection he can get from the outside swamp because it is going to be a fight the Democrats aren't going to give up, and we don't need to be fighting him from the right. The Republicans don't need to be given that same fight. Give him 4 years. That's right. All he's got, and let's get him out of here and see how he does. But if you're going to hold him back, you can't hold him accountable.
So I think that has Pete Hegseth interviewed you before when he was on Fox?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've known Pete for, 5 years, 6 years now. Yeah.
See, if you look at his resume, it's pretty much exactly like the resume you need to change things in the Pentagon. I mean, you have a guy that actually was in two war zones over at Gitmo as a National Guard in the middle of riots over in Washington, the George Floyd riots and the potential storming of the White House. And remember the next day with St. John's Church that got burned. He was over there then. So I think he's got experience. He also wrote a book about it. But in terms of straightening out the Pentagon, now that you've seen it, what do you really need to make the Pentagon more efficient, build ships quicker, build more of them, more ammunitions, widening our military base? Do you think Pete could do that?
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, I am fired up about Pete. I'm on the Armed Services Committee. He'll have to come through our committee for a hearing to get confirmed. He's not one of these woke four-star generals. Brian, you know I held back promotions for a year on all these four-star generals and three stars. They came after me from right and left. We have 44. You know, listen to this stat. We have 44 four-star generals in the Pentagon. Each of them's budget's about $250 million a year with 2,000 people that work for each one of them, okay? And what do they do other than go over there and say, okay, well, let's think up about something we can teach our soldiers when they get back in here. They've been out there and fighting for our country. How many DEI courses do they need to go through? I mean, I am sick of it. We have a lot of good people in the military right now, Brian, but let me tell you something. We are as weak now overall as a military we've ever been, and we're looking down the barrel of a gun of World War III, and Pete will come in there, and he will go through that Pentagon, and we need to knock two sides off of it, lower the money down that goes into that Pentagon, and put it in the warfighter. Because if we don't, if we continue to go the way we're going, we're not going to have a military. We can't recruit anybody. Who wants to get in the military right now with all these woke DEI initiatives that they're pushing?
Yeah, I know. And a lot of family members who served through generations have backed out after Afghanistan. Hopefully they'll see when Pete a fresh start. Here's Elbridge Colby yesterday with Laura Ingraham talking about what they need. Cut 19.
It's really important that the platform that President Trump ran on puts reindustrialization, I believe, is the number two priority, and that's absolutely right. But that is going to take some time. And in the meantime, the threats are imminent. And we've got to husband the resources that we do have with the acute consciousness that I think Pete Hegseth really has, an attention to veterans, the possibility that people are going to be put into combat. And I mean, I don't think there's any kind of message that he would bring and that President Trump has run on than that we should take our service members' lives seriously and not fritter them away on these kind of crusades.
So, there's going to be a lot of huge decisions. And now you have President Biden with a meeting with President Xi. Do you know anything about the president-to-president meeting yesterday?
No, I really don't. But go back to Pete real quick. I'm on the VA committee, too, so we'll work hand in hand. Our veterans need more and more. But, President Trump, came out. I thought that was great. President Biden was very very happy to see him. He looked happier than I've seen him in the last 4 years. again, at the end of the day, a new sheriff's in town, and it's time to do something about this country that we've absolutely tried to flush down the toilet. And it's been help from not just the Democrats, but also a lot of the Rhino Republicans. And it's time to give President Trump his team and let's go. But of course, we got a lot of know-it-alls up here that, it's just their feelings are hurt. We should have had some input on this. Matt Gaetz is a bad dude. Come on. Let's get back to our country and worry about, the Democrats taking our border and knocking it down and the crime in the streets and inflation and people can't live off what their paychecks are. I mean, we got problems, but we can get it back. And President Trump's going to do it, Brian. He's going to get it done.
Senator Thune now in charge over McConnell. So what changes?
Well, not a lot much. You got to remember this, Brian. What does the leader of the Senate do? He's a spokesperson to the media, and he'll obviously communicate with President Trump to get his agenda through. I was for Rick Scott. Again, both were business people. I've known Rick a long time. He was very successful, as President Trump was. John Thune will be fine. He had a visit yesterday with President Trump. They talked about it, and there's a lot of pressure on Thune to get things pushed through. I mean, that's what you do as a leader. But I don't think he'll have the pushback like he did from Leader McConnell. Leader McConnell was dug in real tight, and he fought back a lot on President Trump's agenda. We can't do it this time. He's got 4 years. Really, he got 2 years. And so we're gonna need to knock this out quick. But I'm excited. You can tell I'm fired up. You've talked to me before, and I tell you what, I've never been dejected about the downcline of our country with these Democrats the last 4 years. But we have a chance now, Brian. We have a chance. And let's don't get in the president's way.
So Senator, how do you get these nominees heard? How do you get their confirmation hearing so much quicker than last time? Even, you guys are slowing down Republicans, Democrats, and vice versa. The whole system is antiquated. But how do you move it? How do you move them through in 3 weeks?
Well, again, most of them, they all got to go through committees, and we'll knock those out quick. We're going to be working late hours. We need to be up for 7 days a week. We don't need to be working 3 days and going home. Time is of the essence. And again, there's the recess appointments that could happen. Thune and Mike Johnson have to get together on that and really have to understand how to do it. Now, again, those appointments only last 2 years when you do it that way, but that's fine. Let's get this going and not take any days off until we get all these people in place. President Trump's working 18 hours, 19 hours a day. I know how he works. We need to do the same thing and give the people in our country a day's work, and I'm looking forward to it.
All right. So the recess appointments, you said you're open to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt. Recess appointments should be there. It's in the Constitution. It can be done. It got to be done the right way. We're not going to break the Constitution like the Democrats. We're going to go by the rule of the law. Democrats are going to fight us tooth and nail on everything that we're going to do. They're going to try to hold everything up. Of course, we're going to have some in our side that's going to try to do the same thing because they got their feelings hurt. But at the end of the day, we're going to win out on this because American people are sick and tired of what's going on up here in this big government that's overbloated, spending money. We have $500 billion a year stolen by fraud in this country. Nobody really cares, but they're getting ready to find out what's really happened up here, and a lot of eyes are going to be open. So a lot of people have been up here for a long time on both sides. Better wake up and smell the roses, because there's a new sheriff in town.
I know we're talking about life and death and world war, but do you plan on, without Joe Manchin as a partner, tackling college football rules, this new the new payment system, the new NIL? They are desperate for some type of guardrails.
Yeah, we got to do something, Brian. It's out of control. Again, I'm for players making money, but I'm also for players signing a contract for that money and staying with that contract instead of saying, well, I can go somewhere else next year for $50,000. I don't like to coach. I don't like the offense. Fine, you can leave, but you got to pay price. You can't break that contract. You got to pay it back, or you got to set out a year when you go to another school. The transfer portal is killing college sports. Making money, I'm fine with that. But what's going to happen is we're going to ruin women's sports. We're going to ruin Olympic sports because there's not going to be any money for any of those because all of it's going to go to basketball and football players. And these poor kids that are going to school to play soccer or tennis or golf, they're going to look around going, we're going to be a club sport now. We got to pay $500 to play, for a big university. That's wrong. Absolutely wrong.
Yeah, I mean, let's just get in there. I can't believe it. They're asking for regulation, and you have the experience to do it. Hopefully you'll get a partner Senator Tommy Tuberville, thanks so much.
All right, Brian. Thank you. God bless.
You got it. Back in a moment. Brian Kilmeade, I see your calls up there, and we'll continue to look at the Trump team and where would they go from here. And you're not going to believe the team of resistance that's already forming against the Republicans.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Matt Gaetz for Attorney General.
Wow. You know, I wonder, I don't know, Mr. Gaetz. Again, he'll go through the process, but I kind of wonder whether he could actually get confirmed even by the House Republican conference based upon at least the stories for the last couple years.
Yeah, and that's going to be the key. It's going to be Gaetz. They'll try to give Pete Hegseth a hard time, but ultimately he's very good on his feet and he'll overcome. And he's got a lot of support on the Republican side. I don't know anyone on the Republican side that doesn't support him, because most have been interviewed by him, both know him. You know, you've seen him before. He really has been the number one net. We've been the number one network for 20 years. Pete's been a part of it for the last 12. He's all over the channel. So I really don't think that if you just look at his background and you talk about what he's done already, I don't see him having a problem. The other thing I want to talk about is the resistance building against the president. Believe it or not, there is. These mayors get together. This Jared Polis getting together with Gavin Newsom, getting together with Pritzker. And then you got the whole push for these sanctuary cities. America does not want sanctuary cities. Inner city doesn't want the sanctuary cities. The minorities don't want the sanctuary cities. But mayors like Brandon Johnson will stand in the way. And, of course, sees race and everything. Cut 33.
We're going to stand up. We're going to protect undocumented individuals. We're going to protect black folks, brown folks, Asian folks. Listen, the anti-sentiment that exists in this political space right now is unconscionable and it's dangerous. Whether it's anti-black or anti-Semitic, we're going to protect people and we're going to invest in people. The city of Chicago will be better, stronger, and safer despite who's in the White House.
Now, despite you as mayor, I doubt it. George in Missouri. Hey, George.
Hi, Brian. I believe if you look at the talent and ages of the appointees and the fact, you know, the age of J.D. Vance, Trump is assuring a dominant, continuous Republican presence for the next two decades.
If they produce, right, George? They have talent. They have experience. The president does not mind sharing the spotlight, but if they produce and are successful, you're absolutely right. And don't forget other guys still in the Senate, like Tom Cotton, Brian Kilmeade Show.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
From 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Brian Kilmeade Show. This hour, we're going to be joined by Jackie Heinrich. She's going to bring us the latest from the White House. The aftermath of yesterday's very cordial meeting between the future president and the former president, who was a former president. Andy McCarthy is standing by, Fox News contributor. We'll talk about the cases. Jack Smith is just winding it all down. Juan Merchan is holding it up. Or at least for now, it stays on ice. And he stays, I guess, in the spotlight. And we just got to talk about the attorney general pick. So before we get to these guys, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We're going to defend the people of this city. His threat is not just towards new arrivals and undocumented families. His threats are also against black families.
What are you talking about? That is that embarrassing mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson. The Trump resistance forming and governors are taking the lead. We discuss whether the tone-deaf Dems truly get the message that the people have spoken through this election.
Number two.
Wow. Kind of wonder whether he could actually get confirmed even by the House Republican conference.
We will consider this in the Senate and certainly will be in the Judiciary Committee. I don't happen to serve on that committee.
That is Mark Warner and Shelley Moore Capito picking a starting lineup and ruffling a lot of feathers with out-of-the-box cabinet selections. As Tulsi and Rubio get their slots and Matt Gaetz mysteriously is named to the attorney general slot, does he have a chance at getting confirmed? We do the forecasting.
Number one.
I'm not going to go into granular detail of what was discussed in the meeting. What I can say that it was indeed very cordial, very gracious, and substantive.
Yes, KJP, a sweep. Republicans lock up the House last night, pick their leadership, and great President-elect Donald Trump as he meets and greet, I should say, Donald Trump as he meets one-on-one with the President Biden in the Oval, who's one and done. We'll talk about the massive change to Washington, and that is coming because, you know, the president's filling up his roster quick. I think he's going to name a Treasury Secretary as early as today. I think Burgum's going to get Interior and possibly Energy, some type of overarching role. You need to have coordination between the two along with the EPA. And also, I think that you're going to see an HHS Secretary name, too, because it looks like RFK Jr. is determined to get that slot rather than taking one that won't be confirmed by the Senate. I'm not sure if he's going to be able to get confirmed. He said a lot of controversial things in the past. I think he shoots bears, like sometimes runs into bears, leave them in Central Park. Those type stories are tough to outrun. Andy McCarthy joins us now. Andy, welcome back.
Brian, I'm glad I'm not in that ringer.
Right.
I wish RFK Jr. well.
I know. I he's going to have some problems. But first off, on the attorney general selection, and no one doubts that Matt Gaetz is good on his feet. No one doubts that he's a good conversationalist. No one doubts that he's loyal to the president. I got it. But after that, what do you make of the selection?
It's an appalling pick. And it's really, I just don't understand it because I thought a number of the picks have been very strong. And if you want a kind of an out of the box pick that will disrupt things in a good way, I think, our friend Pete Hegseth is perfect for that. And his pick, I thought, was an inspired choice. This one is just a terrible choice. The guy has no judgment. He's got no experience. The legal positions he's adopted publicly, the most notable of them have been absurd. And the only thing that recommends him for the role is that he's a complete loyalist, which I have to think that President Trump can get any number of people who will be loyal to him, who will make sure that, unlike his first term, his own Justice Department doesn't end up getting a special counsel foisted on him and hamstringing the administration for 2 years. He can get that from someone without having to buy onto the Gaetz baggage. And it's, to me, Brian, it's a waste of time to talk much about this because I don't see how in the world he gets confirmed.
Here's Senator Warner and Republican Senator Capito, cut six.
Wow. Kind of wonder whether he could actually get confirmed even by the House Republican conference.
We will consider this in the Senate and certainly will be in the Judiciary Committee. I don't happen to serve on that committee.
And she went on, cut seven.
What we have to look at is the experience that President-elect Trump has had with the Department of Justice. He has been prosecuted over and over again on some very flimsy terms and just sort of reworking the wheels of justice to be tilted away from him. And I think that's what he's reflecting in a pick that is sort of raising eyebrows across the nation in some ways.
So, obviously, she's trying to be diplomatic, but she's right. The president's been traumatized by the justice system, and he doesn't want to take any chances, Andy.
Yeah, but the justice system is really important. It's actually more important than Donald Trump. So I don't want the justice system to be traumatized by Matt Gaetz. And I think there's a long way. There's a lot of places that you could settle between President Trump's very colorable, worthy concerns about the Justice Department and the judicial system being turned against him and having somebody who's fit to run the Justice Department and will make sure that Donald Trump is immunized from frivolous legal attacks. I think there's a lot of people that you could pick other than Matt Gaetz who could get you there.
I think so, too. I'm not defending him. I thought he really I thought he hurt the country. Forget about the Republicans. The whole House stopped for 3 weeks. He blows up Kevin McCarthy. Thankfully, they have now passed a 9-vote threshold when it comes to
yep,
when
right.
it comes to a move to
vacate the chair.
to vacate the chair and get rid of the speaker. So that's good. And I think with President Trump, will ultimately decide who, if Johnson is that bad that has to be removed, he'll decide it. Kevin McCarthy would still be there. So having said that, some people say this. His ethics committee was about to release their report any day. But the day he resigned, which was yesterday, they no longer are allowed to release that report. Does that have anything to do with it?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with his resignation from Congress. But it goes to show, Brian, I think, that this nomination is counterproductive. Let's put aside that he stops President Trump's momentum, which I think the first bunch of appointments helped along after the election. And let's put aside that he gives the Democrats who are reeling something to rally around in opposing Gates. Why he would do either of those things, I don't know. But if Gates is the nominee, then he's going to be subjected to a Senate confirmation process in which all the stuff that's in the ethics report is going to come out. So if he didn't want that to come out, why not resign from the House? I can totally understand if that's his best way of burying that information and he wants it buried. And I want to be fair here. He was investigated. He was not indicted. He hasn't been found guilty of anything. And we ought to remember that he's presumed innocent.
Yep.
We get all that. But if you really don't want this information to get out publicly, why would you be involved in a situation where it's now going to get the kind of attention it never would have gotten otherwise in a confirmation process?
I think it's a good point. The other thing would be a recess appointment. Do you see that? Where he gets
it? I don't see that.
President
Trump can't force Congress to recess, and I don't think they will recess. I've heard that, and I have to say, you know, Republicans went nuts, and appropriately so, when Obama did this, and those cases ended up in the Supreme Court. The president can't force Congress to go into recess. So I just think that's a non-starter. And if he tries to do that, I think Republicans will fight him on it, as they should.
What about acting? What if they name him acting?
So I have to go back over the acting rules, but my recollection is that you have to be in the department or in the government, in the executive branch, for that to work. So, for example, I think when Matt Whitaker was put in as acting attorney general in President Trump's first term between Sessions and Barr, he was the U.S. attorney in, was it Iowa? I can't remember which district, but it was okay for him to get rotated to the Justice Department because he was already in the executive branch.
And he was in chief of staff for Sessions.
I don't think you can bring somebody in from the outside. I could be wrong about that, but I don't think so.
All right. And so we'll see how that goes, and we'll see what it's going to take. And I just wonder on the rules, it's not necessarily your area, but Schumer was so effective in slowing down all these nominations. It really hurts the country. You can't get people in place to do the job. Other people stay in place or just bureaucrats run the department until their head gets in there. Is there something they can do to pick up the pace from January 3rd when they come back from the holidays?
Yeah, they have actually. I understand that they've reduced that. You used to be able to hold something up for 30 hours. Now I think you can hold it up for 2 hours, which isn't good, but it's a lot better than 30. So, you know, look, Capitol Hill works at its own snail's pace, and we're going to encounter things that we haven't even thought of yet. But I just think this is kind of an unforced era, especially when there are so many other people. I mentioned Matt Whitaker. He'd be an excellent attorney general, and I'm sure he'd be loyal in all the right ways. I'm not using loyalist in the way that it often is used in connection with President Trump, which where it's like the functional equivalent of co-conspirator. I'm not suggesting that there's anything wrong with being loyal to somebody who wants to do things that are lawful and good for the country. But I think you would get that with somebody like Whitaker. Trump would be fully protected and the Justice Department would be run by somebody who knows what he's doing.
So Andy McCarthy, our guest, will watch. You can watch him on Skype. And Andy, so Juan Merchan, could you make sense of it for our audience? He yesterday looked at the New York case this week and said, what about the president and his sentencing after the conviction on 34 felony counts?
Yeah, I think, Brian, this is really widely misunderstood. And I'm not a Merchan fan, as you know, from our conversations about him. But what Merchan did this week was done at the request of both President-elect Trump and the district attorney's office. And what they're trying to wrestle with is whether Trump's election as president and the supremacy clause consequences of that under the Constitution, where state governments are not allowed to take action that would prevent the federal government from functioning, what does that portend for Trump's case going forward, considering he's still got post-trial motions, including the immunity motion, on the table? He hasn't formally been convicted yet. He hasn't been sentenced yet. And there's a long appeals process. But should that all go on while he's president? So I think what they're wrestling with is, does the case have to be dismissed, or should it be suspended while Trump is in office? And then they can think about whether to get around to it or not after, you know, 4 years from now when he's 83 and a twice elected president and all that. But I don't criticize Merchan for the 1 week stay, because both Trump and the district attorney asked for it. And the only thing that's going to happen next Tuesday is Alvin Bragg's office is supposed to come forward with their vision for how the case should proceed from here.
And the same, you know, if he lost, they would sentence him, right, on Tuesday?
No, not on Tuesday. I don't know. The judge is not going to rule on the post-trial motion on Tuesday. The only thing that's going to happen Tuesday is Bragg is going to come in and say, this is what we think you need to do going forward. And that could be dismiss the case. It could be suspend the case. Or it could be, let's rule on the post-trial motion and proceed to sentencing, which I think will result in an appeal and a lot of other problems. But I anticipate that they're going to just suspend the proceedings till Trump is out of office.
So, Andy, just your opinion, because this kind of blends politics and legal. Why do you think they stopped calling him a felon? Biden called him a felon in June. They never called him a felon again. And all the attacks on him, they called him Hitler, a fascist. They stopped calling him a felon. Why, in your opinion, did that label work, I believe, against Democrats?
Yeah, I think what happened was the Lawfare campaign was a flop. And it was worse than a flop. It was a counterproductive flop. So I think probably what the Democrats' internals told them was that when you talk about Trump as a convicted felon, it just reminds voters of the efforts that were made to sideline him by litigation rather than beat him at the ballot box. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, like, you know, Trump drew an inside straight on all this. But the most important development that happened was clearly the Supreme Court's immunity decision, because that really made it, number one, practically impossible for any of the federal prosecutions to get to trial, and they were stronger cases. And then secondly, that means in the public mind, the emblem of Lawfare was Alvin Bragg's case, which was a joke. So I think in most people's mind, this was just it's un-American to use the legal system to try to take out your political opponents, and people don't like it.
I hate it, and I hate it for Democrats, too. Enough. If it's Al Capone, you know, obviously. If it's John Gotti, clearly.
Right.
But if it's politicians, enough. Thanks so much, Andy McCarthy. Always great.
Thanks, Brian.
1-866-408-7669. I see the calls up there from Clifton, New Jersey, Pensacola Beach, Atlanta, and more. We'll get to them in just a moment. Or you can write me, briankilmeade.com. Just click on comments. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
And I just want to point out a couple of other things. On Joe Biden named this woman, Tracy Stone Manning, to run the BLM. That's the Bureau of Land Management, Greg. She had direct ties to an eco-terrorist organization. Then, after the October 7th attack, he nominated a lifetime federal judgeship to a guy named Adil Manji, who had hosted anti-Semitic groups on campus and defended cop killers. he had Sam Brittain.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
The luggage thief,
okay, to oversee nuclear waste disposal. Good thing he didn't steal any of that. I could go on and on, but the last one I would mention is Jen Granholm. She literally invested in EV battery companies while serving as the energy secretary of the country. So if you're going to be all up in arms about one nomination, just give Pete a chance. I think that he will do a great job.
Yeah, that's true. That was before Matt Gaetz came out, which is put Pete his heads at this side. I think he'll do a great job. I think everyone that knows Pete, he's going to win him over. He's very eloquent. He knows how to talk. He's a broadcaster. And you got this military background, speaks for itself. And talking about Secretary of Defense. Michael, you're in Georgia. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Brian. Back in the day, nobody had a problem with Obama having a wingman in his AG, Eric Holder. And if there's anyone who needs a wingman in Washington, it's Donald Trump. Am I right?
Don't you think that Whitaker could do the same thing without the baggage of blowing up the Senate and being a grandstander with ethics violations coming streaming out? Don't you think there's other people that like Trump that are in the legal profession? And he was assistant attorney general under Clinton, so he did have the skill set.
Yeah. Well, what if this is a way to give Matt, a good friend, a way out
Maybe.
Of his situation, and it's
Could
just
be.
A straw man nomination?
You're a smart guy, Michael. You're right. You're right. If that's a way of paying back a friend, it's okay. I just don't think he's the best nominee. And the thing is, how do you expect me to have credibility when I tell you Pete's right and pretend that Matt is right, too, because he's not?
Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Well, Mr. President-elect and former President, thank you. Donald, congratulations.
Thank you.
And looking forward to having a, like we said, a smooth transition. Do everything we can to make sure you're accommodated, what you need. And we're going to get a chance to talk about some of that today. So
good.
Welcome
thank
back.
You. And, thank you very much. And politics is tough. And it's, in many cases, not a very nice world, but it is a nice world today, and I appreciate very much a transition that's so smooth. It'll be as smooth as it can get, and I very much appreciate that, Jim.
You're welcome.
And that was all the exchange that we got yesterday in the Oval Office as President Biden and President-elect Trump met. And they evidently, instead of an hour, tentatively said it was going to be an hour, there was nothing backstopping President Trump's meeting, and it went too. What really happened behind the scenes, in a quote to the New York Post, if I were to summarize it, very cordial. They talked about foreign affairs. They talked about the Middle East. And now President Biden's off to go over to President Xi in China. I wonder if he had a message to give to him from Trump. Jackie Heinrich joins us now, Fox News' senior White House correspondent. Jackie, welcome back. Were you surprised how cordial both seemed yesterday?
You know, Brian, I was shocked as anyone to see the big smiles on Biden's face, especially when he was with Jill. You know, those photos at the White House circulated, the two of them walking down the colonnade and then, you know, posing on the South Lawn together. That was just a really stunning image. And, you know, to have posed for White House photographers, not even in front of the press, this was additional to the, you know, Oval Office spray that we got. That was just really something. I think that, you know, Biden is going out of his way to make sure that he upholds all the democratic traditions that, you know, he did not receive in 2020, maybe a little bit of a needle with that at Trump. But I think also he wants to, you know, set his legacy in place, and this is how he wants to build it out. But yeah, it was a really stunning, stunning day yesterday. History, really.
Yeah. And then when you talk about, you know, the New York Post, he did talk to the New York Post, and he came out and said some nice things about their exchange. He said it was my, it was my great honor to have a chance to walk through. And he gave all his statements right after. And they talked about, he said the Joe Biden came back and said he had some very direct questions about what was going on. So I think the country benefits when things like normal happen, when things go back to protocol. And I think that now President Biden, to me, just as a human being, I just noticed he looks relieved. you see him much more than I do. Do you feel the same way?
I do. I think, you know, in a lot of ways, he is vindicated, although he would never admit it, because his, you know, party pushed him aside. And remember, these were the same people that did not help him when he was at the top of the ticket, did not help him win election in 2020, passed him over for Hillary. The Obamas of the world, the David Plus, the Messinas, the, you know, Pod Save America bros, those people, and also Obama, who he so desperately wanted his approval. And you can see in their interactions when they have them in front of cameras, he still does. I mean, the way he looks at Obama is just really interesting to me. But I think, you know, he's vindicated in that he's the only person who has beat Donald Trump. He believed that he would be the only person who could, and now that was proven right. I also, though, think he's a little bit sad because a lot of what his, you know, legacy would have been better. Its future would have been better ensured if Harris were to have won. I think he's probably worried about where his, you know, foreign policy goes. I think that was probably a major, major focus of his conversation with Trump, because so much of Biden's priorities have been focused on Ukraine. And, you know, Trump's future aid to Ukraine under Trump is a question mark. You know, Mike Johnson reportedly said something yesterday along the lines of, we're not going to fund Ukraine anymore, or was asked a question if he would, and indicated that might not happen. So I'm sure that Ukraine was a big topic of discussion. And I also know that the White House has been trying to figure out ways to position Ukraine so that if future U.S. support, you know, dwindles, that they'll have European allies backing them up and or be in a better position to negotiate an end without negotiating away any territories.
There was no schedule for the vice president to be there, but there is no schedule right now for her to tour J.D. Vance around the observatory, right?
No. In fact, I'm hearing word she's going on vacation in Hawaii.
I wonder why. How about the reports about these celebrities and the $500,000 to Al Sharpton's group and the $1 million or something like that to Harpo Productions for the big set so Oprah can interview her? And who knows? We don't know yet about Eminem. We don't know yet about Beyonce and Megan Thee Stallion. That's I was just stunned by this.
Yeah, I was too. And I have an early look at some of those numbers. I mean, we're going to get the report for the October spending, I think, later on this month. It was, you know, I heard from one of the donors that it wasn't just six figures for the Call Her Daddy podcast, that it was $500,000. You know, that's so much money. When you're paying Oprah $1 million for a fee, you know, you roll out all these celebrities, and the problem that these donors and sort of people who are not in the room making the final decision on spending, but have sort of given their thoughts, they were all like, look, this is an old tired playbook. You're running Harris like you ran Obama, and she is not Obama. You know, are we reaching the people we need to reach by having so-and-so come out and speak, Beyonce, you know, Christina Aguilera, whatever, Lady Gaga, rather? It's, you know, not going to pull over the voters whose support we are struggling to retain. And I think what's happening now is they have lost every sub-demographic in such a way that it's clear there's not one singular reason that they lost, but they have to sort of re-examine everything. And when you take in a record amount of money, when you raise $1 billion and you lose that badly, it's an indictment of the Stephanie Cutters of the world, the David Pluffs of the world, who ran this playbook for Obama and are running this playbook for Harris as though she were the same candidate. When the party has changed, the candidate has changed, and the issues have changed, and it's not a good use of your funding anymore. And donors are going to have a difficult time ponying up. I was also reading about the debt that they're in. You know, it's at least $20 million. It might be more. They're going to have a hard time pulling out of that, and it could have ramifications, you know, in the midterms. That was an issue for Hillary in 2016.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the DNC is always in a problem, and this guy Jamie Harrison was walking around with a documentarian with him everywhere as if he's making history. I'm sure they're going to want to burn that film. So Hakeem Jeffries addressed his caucus yesterday, and he said, we're not going to get the majority. That's done, even though there's some races yet to be determined. He took responsibility for it. I got the sense in Washington, but you live there, that it was a fait accompli for a long time. It looked like the Republicans were not going to hold the House. When did that change?
You know, I think it changed when after the DNC, because you had everything sort of set up for Democrats to sweep. There, the energy, the momentum was there. And then Harris fumbled, and she fumbled so badly that I think it impacted all these down-ballot races. You did have, when Biden was still at the top of the ticket, concern that especially on the Senate side, some of these Democrats were, you know, polling better than he was, and that the top of the ticket was going to drag down the bottom of the ticket. And then at the DNC, everyone was very excited they'd turned it around. The money was coming in. You know, the media is all over her. Yep. Things are changing. And then she went into hiding for weeks and didn't take any interviews, didn't seize that momentum. And then when she came out, she fumbled every interview she did. She had a terrible time staking out her policy positions. She had a terrible time articulating how it was that she became this new moderate figure, you know, of her former self. It was not believable. And I think people just started to see that it was a facade. And then they got really spooked. You did have, you know, the Democrats outraising the Republicans. And I think that in many of the House races, they were pretty comfortable about that. But when you look at those swing states where the top of the ticket was really going to matter, they were spooked there. And that is where you ended up having these losses.
We're talking to Jackie Heinrich, White House correspondent. I think that, Jackie, what do you expect to happen overseas with the president's swan song overseas visit? I mean, he's going to be meeting with impactful countries. Blinken's having big meetings, too. What do you think he's going to try to get done there? And do you think that Trump gave him a message? Or did he ask for one?
You know, I think that they were probably talking about Ukraine. There was something that Trump said, and I forget where I read this, but it was, you know, basically we're going to tell Putin to end this war, and we've got some leverage because we could end up, you know, changing the policy on long-range weapons, and we're going to force them to come to the table, and you know, that's how we're going to get it done. I had been hearing, actually, that the Biden administration was considering rethinking that policy as a way to box Trump in, because they don't want to, you know, have when Biden leaves office, new administration come in and then have Ukraine be forced to give up, you know, territory or negotiate away their land. I think that that was actually an area that they both maybe agree on or are talking about using. You do have some opposition from, I believe it's the UK and Germany. Don't quote me on that, but there are a couple other nations, partners and allies that still have the same policy as the US. I believe France had cleared the scalp missiles for use. Don't quote me on that. I got to pull up my notes. But I think this is a conversation that once the U.S. does it, other countries are going to need to do that too. So that's probably a big focus at the G20. As it goes with China, you know, this is something Biden has always talked about, his hundreds of thousands of miles
yes.
he's traveled and all the hours he's talked to Xi Jinping. I think this is going to be just sort of a, you know, final chapter in his career, and he wants to have that conversation.
So, Jackie, what do you do? Do you wait for the new White House to take over? What do you think you'll be doing next?
I divide my brain and do both.
You do? You got both. You got both the incoming and outgoing.
Yeah, we're trying. You know, it's tough to sort of wrap your head around, but it's not at the same time. Many of the issues remain the same. You're just dealing with different people. I think once we have, you know, the full Trump incoming cabinet sort of fleshed out and a few more puzzle pieces get in place, we will be dealing with them more. And as Biden, you know, finishes his last foreign trip and then goes into sort of holiday party season, that will wind down. I think this week and next week, we're probably trying to straddle the line and do both, which is a little bit challenging. But you're going to see me and Peter rotating, going down to Florida during the transition to report from there while we also cover the White House. We'll see. I think that, you know, the confirmations talk is sort of dominating the news this week, who might end up coming in, who might not, and what the administration, incoming administration, is going to look like and what that might mean for any policy shifts ahead.
All right. There we go. Jackie Heinrich, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Appreciate it. Jackie, you've given us a hand on a day off. Randy in Yorktown, Virginia. Hey, Randy.
Brian, thank you very much for taking my call. What an honor it is to speak to you.
Well, thanks for getting online. I know you're in Virginia. We're very happy to have so many listeners in Virginia, Randy. So you think Matt Gaetz was a good move?
Well, I think it's just a strategic move is what I'm thinking, Brian, because I'll be honest, when I first heard the news, I was like kind of shocked because I'd been going through the list of all of his appointees, and I was thinking, yes, 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 yes. And then the Gaetz one hit, and although I liked Matt Gaetz, I was like, what? I didn't really get it. And then I thought, well, as you were talking with Andy McCarthy about this, it kind of came to me that maybe what this is, because it seems like Matt has an issue with the Justice Department, just like Trump has an issue with the Justice Department. And I'm wondering if this is Trump giving him the opportunity to go in and clean house at the Justice Department, knowing he'll never get confirmed, but then he'll go on to some other position. And he's taking one for the team here. He's going in to clean house. That's kind of what came to me, and I was wondering what
I just don't know how he gets in there, Randy. Right now, I don't think he could change his background enough to convince the people in the Judiciary Committee to push him through for a general vote. I'd be shocked if he did. Maybe Trump's got even more. Does Trump want to spend all of his leverage and capital on getting Matt Gaetz in?
Well, I don't know if he would if he got a recess appointment. So I thought I had heard that was kind of on the table with the whole speaker thing. Maybe I'm wrong. I'll be honest, I wish I could spend more time listening to you so I would know more. But that's my thought, and I'm thinking maybe that's the plan. If not, I'm with you.
But they'll be legally challenged by – do they want to have a legal challenge to their attorney general selection when they want to do things so quickly? Randy, thanks so much. Listen, when we come back, I'll be able to take some calls, also your emails, and we're going to take a look at the resistance. Yes, the Democratic resistance is forming.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
He also picked... You ready? Co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend. Not even like regular. Weekend. Pete
Hegseth.
Yeah. Okay. Pete Hegseth. And he's picked him to be U.S. Secretary of Defense. Now, MAGA supporters and detractors are trying to figure out what? Because of this pick.
How hard is it to say Hegseth? Come on. It's the easiest name in the world to say.
No, they know how to do it. That is just terrible on their part.
And by the way, it's like he doesn't have the weekday. It has nothing to do with his resume, Secretary of Defense, and 8 hours, what he does on the weekend. So she did absolutely no research to find out who he is. And people were surprised by it, but not many people are against it. I mean, there are people on other channels who are against it, but you look at the resume – you see him in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Gitmo, and you see how many years he's been in it. Then you go, okay, he's just a warfighter. No, Harvard and Princeton. He's a community. What has he done? While serving in the National Guard, he's still on Fox News, number one network. Well, how's his show? Number one. How's his series, Warriors? No, top series on Fox Nation. What about his book about the Pentagon? It was number one for 4 or 5 weeks. So, I mean... you might say it surprised you, but you can't say, well, this person's not worthy. Steve in Pensacola. Hey, Steve.
Brian, you know, you asked why they quit calling him a felon, and you and I spoke about this. I served with Conrad Black in federal prison, and you and I spoke about why they quit calling him a felon is because they were alienating almost 70% of their constituency within the Black community, and that's one of the reasons they did. And please... it's very hurtful for us in Pensacola Beach to have both Joe Scarborough saying that he was a congressman here. And I think the whole Gaetz thing was just a setup to help him get out of his situation, which is, you know, politics, if you will. But he's in no way qualified. I want congressmen to start doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yep.
Getting my roads built, getting bridges built.
I know.
Getting that infrastructure money going instead of sitting out there on TV cameras all the time. Talking about what is good for some. They're almost like the celebrities that went and endorsed these people for president.
Yeah, I mean, you got two different Scott, Steve, I 100% agree with you. You got Michael Walsh talking substance and policy, and the other one just trying to get famous. Huge difference. Brian Kilmeade.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Yesterday, a lot of dramatics as president meets president. And now things have calmed down somewhat. I expect to get a Treasury Secretary nominee soon. One energy, possibly. Doug Burgum's going to probably be there today. And then you have Scott Bessent, who's a great friend of our show, just on Fox and Friends today. And he really feels, and he should, that he's a finalist to be Treasury Secretary. In fact, I saw some odds on it. It's about 89%. The guy in charge, Howard Lutnick, who's in charge of screening everybody, suddenly put his own name in for Treasury Secretary. I find that a little bit surprising. So, little like Dick Cheney, I interviewed everyone for vice president, and I choose me. So, Howard Lutnick, good friends with the president, but more of a sales guy. He understands finance, and it's good to be a sales guy, be out there generally and talk about this number and do what some people in different administrations have done. I think Kevin Hassett's a great salesperson for what's going on in the economy. But I don't think they compare to Scott Bessent. We'll see. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We're going to defend the people of this city. His threat is not just towards new arrivals and undocumented families. His threats are also against black families.
Of course, you have to see black and white all the time if you're that mayor from Chicago, Mayor Brandon Johnson. But it's called a sanctuary city that hurts people in your city that actually pay taxes. The Trump resistance is forming, and governors and mayors are taking the lead. We'll discuss what their angle is and why they're so tone deaf to the election results.
Number two.
Wow. Kind of wonder whether he could actually get confirmed even by the House Republican conference.
We will consider this in the Senate and certainly will be in the Judiciary Committee. I don't happen to serve on that committee.
Right. The picking a starting lineup has been really strong. The president's been doing it really quick. It shows his people have been very organized. But Attorney General Matt Gaetz is creating the greatest, dust cloud. We'll see. As Tulsi Gabbard gets director of national intelligence, I think she'll be fantastic. And Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense. Look forward to the other positions being filled, the nominations being looked at.
Number one.
I'm not going to go into granular detail of what was discussed in the meeting. What I can say that it was indeed very cordial, very gracious, and substantive.
Good job, KJP. And I know that pains you to say it, but it looks like both presidents got along in the Oval. They talked policy. In fact, that's where we'll begin. Talking policy, this is really what they said. President Trump revealed exclusively to the New York Post what he and Biden talked about. He says, you know, it's been a long, long slog. It's been a lot of work on both sides, and he did a very good job with respect to campaigning and everything else. We really had a really good meeting. I asked for his views, and he gave them to me. Also, we talked very much about the Middle East. Likewise, I wanted us to know his views on what we are, on where we are, and what he thinks. And he gave them to me. He was very gracious. So he said he expected to see each other again before the inauguration. He said the Oval Office is so beautiful. I do certainly look forward to coming back. We'll have that very, very nice meeting that takes place between the presidents sometime prior, you know, that takes place just prior to going in. So going into the inauguration. And this is going to be the theme after Christmas. President's going to have the biggest crowds. I'm sure he's not going to talk about it like last time. But he's going to make sure he has the biggest crowds. And I'll tell you, there's so many people that are so relieved that this president has won because of the policies in and so terrible, I think, for the country. Joe Biden's policies were jamming down new Green Deals, the whole DEI, the whole political correctness, the whole pronoun era. It is done. And that's what people are done with. Done being anti-American. Done with all that. I think he's going to get the biggest crowd. Marco Rubio as Secretary of State couldn't be better. I really don't think he could be better. Tulsi Gabbard, Director of National Intelligence. Yeah, she doesn't have that typical background, but she's got military experience, extremely bright, been in Congress, has questioned and studied and gotten these briefings at the highest level for, I think, at least three terms. I think she'll be great at that, and she'll make people accountable, and she'd be quick to see if people behind the scenes are out there stabbing in the back, and Andy McCabe in the CIA, somebody in the FBI. Also, she'll probably have some input who the FBI director is. So you got Michael Waltz, security advisor, Lee Stefanik, UN ambassador, Huckabee, Israeli ambassador, Lee Zeldin, EPA administrator, Tom Homan, border czar, Stephen Miller, White House deputy chief of staff, William McKinley, McGinley, White House counsel, Tulsi Gabbard, as I mentioned, Gates has been nominated for attorney general, the great Pete Hegseth, secretary of defense. So one person that can't figure out Pete Hegseth or how to say his name or why he's there is the extremely not well-read Whoopi Goldberg, Cup 44.
He also picked, you ready, co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend. Not even like regular. Weekend. Pete
Hegseth.
Yeah. Okay. Pete Hegseth. And he's picked him to be U.S. Secretary of Defense. Now, MAGA supporters and detractors are trying to figure out what? Because of this pick.
Well, there's other people he could have picked, but he wants somebody in there that understands the military that's going to set the tone. It's going to be really important for him to pick a deputy with a lot of experience that's trustworthy and a chief of staff. You staff up, figure out the bureaucracy, let him know the halls, where it works, where to go, and I think Pete will be great. Also, he's got to improve recruiting. Right away, it's going to improve attitude. It'll help recruiting by his presence. He's going to set the tone. He'll go out there and talk to people, talk to schools, and let them know you have great pride in serving. And also, look, Taiwan is under a lot of pressure. They've ordered a lot of stuff from us. It's not been delivered. We've got to expand the industrial base. I think that's great. As a Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, who's on here a lot, he was on with me today on television and talked about why he wants to go in and get this job. Listen.
So your thoughts about President Trump's vision for the economy and where you might fit in?
Well, you know, the good thing, Brian, is everyone asks me, what do you tell President Trump he should do? I don't have to tell Donald Trump he should do anything. He's done it. We had a great economy under Trump 1.0. 2016 to just till we hit the wall in COVID was one of the greatest periods in American history. I think under Donald Trump, we could have a golden age for the next 4 years. We can bring back the manufacturing. We could have energy dominance. Have you already seen what's happening with, you know, everyone's laying down their weapons? Thanks to President Trump, we're going to have peace, and we're going to have this technology boom.
Well, I don't know if they're laying down their weapons, but they're indicating they want to come to the table. You have Abbas calling up and Netanyahu speaking three times and Zelensky speaking once and Vladimir Putin reportedly calling last Thursday. So people are reaching out more than just saying hello. These are hot spots. And Scott Bessent, look, he's not there to wow you. He's not Anthony Robbins. What he is somebody. He said, very interesting timeline. I said, Scott, how did you grow up? He goes, in South Carolina. I go, but how did you grow up? Were you rich? He said, yes, initially. Then my dad lost everything. We had to all go out and get a job. At 9 years old, he got his first job, never stopped working. He said that he got into Harvard or Yale, Harvard or Yale, and they couldn't afford it. So he took two jobs and took out loans all 4 years. He had $24,000 worth of student debt and just worked and paid it the whole thing off. And I asked him, what's your greatest concern? And his greatest concern, he says, the wealth gap. I said, wow. Isn't that interesting to be a Wall Street guy, hang out with all rich people, try to win over a billionaire, and most biggest concern is a wealth gap. That means that he not only doesn't just care about, he knows the rich will be fine. But he wants to make sure the middle class gets bigger and the working class has hope. So that's interesting. Listen, also, John Thune spoke today for the first time as majority leader, won the vote yesterday. Here's a little of his message on how he'll be different from Mitch McConnell and how he sees his job. Cut 45.
We have a lot of brilliant people in the Republican Conference brimming with ideas and knowledge. And it will be my job to make sure that they have the chance to use those ideas and that knowledge to strengthen our country and to make life better for the American people. That's what I focused on as chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee. It's what I focused on as whip. And it's what I plan to do as leader.
Nice. So I think he'll be out there. I think he'll be vocal. Know what I think? I know you guys probably don't you think this is a negative, but I just know the president likes people that look the part. This guy looks the part. One thing the president said about Scott Bessent, who's 89% chance of being named, according to the betting lines, as Treasury Secretary, he says he's a good person, good-looking guy. So the other thing is, you know, the president's got the first Hawaiian DNI. You know, he's got first Cuban Secretary of State. You know how I found that out? I looked at the resume. The president doesn't say, I have a woman, I have a lesbian, I got a black man, I have a Indian, I have enough. We're done with that. He's setting up a diverse cabinet of qualified people. He's not looking to check a box. And that is a relief, because you out there in your business, we can pull back from that. Just hire the best person. Give people the best opportunity. So we'll talk. We'll take your calls in a second. 1-866-408-7669. But I just know, you know, there's some pushback on some of these guys. Tom Homan will have a tough time, but he doesn't need to get any confirmation. Not needing confirmation. I think Lee Zeldin will be in there. Not need for confirmation. He will need confirmation, I should say. But he'll know these are all his friends. I think that'll be fine. They're going to make sure that he understands that there's climate challenges. He'll admit that. But he's not going to want to sign it to the Paris Accord or whatever they're calling it now. Stuart in Orange County, California. Stuart. All right. Glenn in Dayton, Ohio. Glenn.
Hey, Brian. Happy belated birthday.
Thank you. It was May.
Brother. Well, I'm talking about Marine Corps birthday.
Oh, okay.
Hey, I do like your previous caller. I believe that Trump's appointment of Gates was strategic. But I believe it's because he can see from the timeline of how things happen. Thune gets appointed as the leader of the Senate earlier in the day, and I believe he's smoking them out. He wants to see from the jump who's going to support his agenda and who's not. And I will shy towards Tuberville more than I would Lankford or the others.
Right.
And I would
so,
like,
you know, Lankford didn't come out and says he's going to get his vote. Lindsey Graham says they're going to get a vote. They have a chance. They should be heard. So the one person that said that doesn't think he has a shot is Murkowski. But no one's going to be surprised, Glenn, if Murkowski and Collins are giving President Trump a hard time. But they're from districts they believe that is not very conservative, moderates.
Right. Well, he's had 4 years to think about it. Hmm. He's had 4 years to think about those people that say they're for him, but then when the time comes, they didn't support him. And I think he's been thinking about, how do I make sure that they do not get in my way, in the way of the American people. They can either share the political capital that he clearly has, or they can become pariahs. And I believe he wants to feather them out immediately from the very beginning and put pressure on them.
Maybe. We'll find out. We can speculate, but I just don't think he's got a shot at getting confirmed traditionally. So I don't know what he could possibly do to change anybody's mind, because he's not that likable. He's smart. He's good on his feet. But he's not likable, and his track record is impossible to explain. But he was loyal to President Trump, and there'll be nobody going after President Trump when he's there, and he won't recuse himself. That's pretty clear. Listen, I don't want to take all this time from the next segment, so I'll be sure to get your calls just around the other bend. We're also going to talk about, I want to tell you what the resistance is forming on the left, which to me shows they're so tone deaf. And then Mark Thiessen at the bottom of the hour. Let's go. Let's take a short time out and come back. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We have an embarrassment of riches here. The Republican Conference is full of talented people who are extraordinary leaders and have great expertise, and everyone in this Congress, in this conference, could serve in a leadership position in the administration. But I have begged and pleaded with the new president enough already. Okay, but because our numbers are small, we are going to have the majority. We're celebrating that. I think it could be as high as a 5-seat margin, but we'll have some of these vacancies open as we begin the year. We'll fill them as quickly as possible. Now, there are others here who President Trump has interest in serving in other positions. And I said, please, sir, no.
And he took Gates anyway. So he took Gates, Waltz, Stefanik, and he took another from. So we'll see where this, we'll see where it goes. So they could, he said, I could take two. He's already taken three. So the other thing, the resistance, as I was telling you, is falling. The de facto blue state resistance, it's Illinois and Colorado governors. They announced the creation of the Governor's Safeguarding Democracy Organization, the nonpartisan alliance providing a playbook for other governors seeking to push back on a second Trump term. Isn't that nice? Instead of trying to work, even pretending to work with him, they're organizing against him. The big picture, Democratic state officials across the nation are wary of another Trump presidency and pledge to play an adversarial role. When he says you have the state's rights to handle things like the pandemic, Governor Gavin Newsom had a special legislative session December 2nd. Safeguarding California was the theme. The Attorney General of Washington State studied Trump's campaign promises, see how he could push back on it. The Arizona Attorney General, Chris Meyer, said, can't imagine a single Democratic Attorney General in the country that won't be involved in fighting unconstitutional behavior. Well, getting rid of sanctuary cities, arresting up illegal aliens, scooping them up and making sure they're not committing crimes. I hope that they understand that the American public is with the president on this. Brian, listening in North Dakota. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how are you doing, Brian?
Great. What's your mind?
Well, I'd like to have you. This is a theory, and I'd like to have your opinion on it, because I believe there's always a plan that's going on, unlike the Democratic side when, you know, you ask them, hey, you know, who do you want to be president? What will you do when you be president? Well, I'll follow, you know, Biden. But anyway, so here's an idea of what the plan is. You put Getz up there, let him run. It exposes to the public intangible assets of the weaponization of against both of the gentlemen, and Trump and Getz. And even if he doesn't pass the test, that information is out there so that the next person that they bring in, they're going to be tired of fighting over it, they'll go ahead and nominate him.
Yeah, there's got to be a strategy, because he's not going to get through. And they want to see, you know, loyalty test perhaps. But when you start seeing some of the things in his background, he's probably the last person that should be nominated. The last.
Yeah, well, you got to have the loyalty, because I'm not much of a Thune fan coming from South Dakota. And I'm seeing his rise. He's pretty much a rhino to me. Eastern State Rhino.
They think Todd Blanche is going to be deputy AG to somebody. No. And he was his long-term attorney. So get some loyalists in there. I understand to watch your back. Matt Whitaker could do the same thing, I think. But maybe you don't think so. I understand that. Lara, listening over in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, Lara.
Hi. Well, he kind of stole my thunder, but I wanted to say that, you know, Matt Getz, that was coming out of left field.
Yep.
So there has to be a strategy. And Trump, you know, because Trump's thinking strategy of how he'll have to go around these people that are going to be fighting. But I'm just curious what you thought about what his strategy was, because there's got to be one.
Yeah, there is. Put it out there. I think it's something to avoid his ethics complaint that now goes, unless it's leaked out, we're not going to really see any details, although she read a ton about it, not good, drugs and teenage girls. So not usually a good combination for a sitting congressman, but he keeps winning in a very Republican district. So he puts it out there, he goes out there, and he then plays some type of advisor role for the president. But he's out of Congress. He resigned for Congress. So even if he doesn't get the nomination, he ran. Kevin McCarthy put up money for his opponent, Republican opponent in the primary, but he won. Mark Thiessen's next. He has some advice for the president. He also analyzes where his cabinet is right now. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It is clear that the American people did make clear that they want Donald Trump in the White House, and there is power that comes with that. And of course, these latest nominations, I think, are a clear sign of how aggressive Trump plans to be. Also, just how quickly all of these nominations have been rolling out is another very clear sign that Trump is not going to waste any time. He is going to step into the Oval Office, and he is going to get moving quickly.
And that is Steph Knight of Axios, noticing the velocity of picks. And I expect the Treasury Secretary, Energy Secretary, to come out quick, too. Mark Thiessen joins us now, Washington Post, speechwriter for Bush, Fox News contributor. Mark, welcome back. You got to be impressed with the speed. They seem organized. Would you agree with that?
Well, first of all, I think the vast majority of the picks are outstanding. I think Mike Waltz for National Security Advisor is outstanding. Rubio at State is terrific. I'm really excited about Pete Hegseth. I think Pete is it's interesting. Everyone's saying, well, he's only 44. You know, he's not qualified to be Secretary of Defense. It's like, I'm sorry, Don Rumsfeld was 43 the first time he was nominated to be Secretary of Defense. So Pete will not be the youngest Secretary of Defense in American history if he's confirmed. So these are all great picks. The Matt Gaetz pick, not so much. I think that's Donald Trump's first unforced error of the transition, and it's a sign that maybe he's going a little too fast. I think something like that sounds like it was hatched on Trump Force One with a small group of people and just not vetted, not planned, and I don't think Gaetz has a chance in hell of getting confirmed in the U.S. Senate.
Right. Here's Congressman Max Miller about that, a Republican from Ohio. Cut 10.
I just think it's silly. The president is smart enough and his team is smart enough to know that Mr. Gaetz will never get confirmed by the Senate whatsoever.
So this is a Republican. He's not going to vote on his house, but that's just a sentiment. He's the most unpopular person in Congress, I think.
Yeah, so I mean, first of all, nobody is happier than Speaker Johnson and his House colleagues that he's resigned. He didn't have to resign from the Congress in order to pursue this nomination. He did because in 2 days there's an ethics committee report coming out about him that he wanted to preclude. Guess what? I think every element of that ethics committee report will be demanded by the Senate in his confirmation hearings, and they'll call the members of that committee to testify on what they found. So it's not like it's not going to come out. The best thing he could do is just resign and go away.
But he's not. At least he's going to. Could he be a recess appointment?
It's complicated because first of all, you have to have a recess to have a recess appointment. There's this whole controversy about whether Trump wants to use this Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution, which has never been used, to adjourn Congress and then install his entire cabinet through recess appointments, which would allow them to serve for 2 years, through the term of Congress. That's never been tried before. And I think that's a really, really, really bad idea because keep in mind, we've got a 53-seat majority in the Senate. A bunch of guys were just elected for 6 years. They're going to outlast Donald Trump. Chuck Grassley is the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. He's 91. He's never running again. Trump has no leverage over him. There's a whole bunch of people who might just decide, you know, I'm my seat's up in 4 years. I'm not running again. I'm going to do it. He doesn't have the control over the Senate that he might have over the House. And this endangers the rest of his agenda because if he does a power move on the Senate and trying to ram through a whole bunch of nominees, including people he doesn't like, you know, he's got things that there are a lot of Republicans who aren't comfortable with, like the idea of no taxes on Social Security income. Right. That's something that could, you know, a lot of Republicans look at that and say that could bankrupt Social Security. I don't think that's a good way. Social Security is already headed towards bankruptcy. Why would we do that? He's going to have to win people over for some of these non-traditional positions he's taken. And why would he endanger his agenda by alienating members of the Senate who jealously guard the Senate's prerogatives?
Yeah, you don't want to spend your capital there. I just maybe they didn't really think it out.
Why waste your capital on Matt Gaetz? I mean, truly, when there's so many. By the way, there is a plethora of brilliant conservative lawyers who have been absolutely loyal to him, defended him, been on the airwaves, fighting the legal fight. There's so many people he could pick to shake up the Justice Department. Why Matt Gaetz? It's just mind-boggling to me.
So you wrote a column about the 8 Democratic choices that paved the way for Trump's comeback. One, the spending. Number 2, the border disaster. It's really hard to get all 3. Number 3, the catastrophe, the Afghanistan withdrawal. They broke their promise to unite the country. That he never even tried to unite the country, did he?
No, he didn't. In fact, he did the opposite. So this is a guy who his inaugural speech. A lot of the roots of this defeat were in the first months of the Biden-Harris administration. His inaugural promise was, I will put my whole soul into uniting the country. And he was more divisive than Trump. This is a guy who went to Atlanta and gave a speech comparing Republicans who voted against him on his partisan election law to Bull Connor and Jefferson Davis. He called them racists and traitors. And in the final weeks, you know, said that the Trump supporters were garbage. If a lot of voters looked at that and said, look, if both sides are slinging mud, at least I'll pick the guy who like made my life better. You're not only slinging mud, but you've given me the worst inflation in four decades. My groceries are $100 basket of groceries costing me $125. So if you're not going to be nicer and more and unite the country, why on earth would I vote for you?
Yeah. And that all leads to it. And the thing is, I really believe that Joe Biden think he was doing a great job I really do. That's why he's really befuddled that he was kicked out, which is part of his cognitive decline. It's part of the whole process. So does it surprise you that the opposition is already combining and forming a operation of resistance with Gavin Newsom, with Polis and Pritzker? And they're trying to find out different areas they could push back against a Trump White House, especially when it comes to immigration.
It doesn't surprise me, though. On the other hand, Gavin Newsom, you know, smartly went out and said, you know, I want the president to succeed. I'm going to give him a chance to succeed. But it doesn't surprise me. And Republican governors did it to Biden. You know, there was a lot of the policies that were stopped in the courts were because the state attorney generals and the state governors enacted lawsuits to block him. The reason why the immigration issue took off is because a Republican governor decided that Texas isn't going to be the only state that has illegal migrants in it. We're going to ship them to New York and Chicago and other places. So it's not unexpected, but I think that the level of the tone, I think, is different now. If you go back, we all remember 2016, they were you know, lighting limousines on fire during the inauguration, and there were marches and protests, and they had the women's march with those pink hats. And they, you know, the cry went up, you know, Trump is not my president. You know, he's a Russian stooge. He was put in place by Vladimir Putin and blah, 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 and all this other stuff. You're not seeing all that right now because the victory was so decisive. I mean, he won the popular vote as well as the Electoral College. He won every swing state. It's like, I think right now the Democrats are sort of they're licking their wounds and trying to figure out what the hell happened. So I'm surprised, actually, there's not more resistance.
Well, I tell you, there is a sense, you know, those red hats that they say is triggering. Now I see them in New York City. I'm watching West Virginia play football. The guy made an interception. They do the Trump dance. They did Bosa in San Francisco does the Trump dance after a sack. And I'm saying to myself, well, what a difference. Everyone was saying take a knee during the national anthem, kind of blaming the president. Wherever he goes, he was getting protested. Of course, he always had his supporters. I think the American people have been won over, and not all of them, obviously, but you don't win the popular vote. You don't get over 300 electoral votes and just okay. I think things are changing before our eyes. Are you there yet?
I think they are, but I think Trump's got to seize this moment to unite the country and do what Biden promised to do but didn't do. You know, he's got a huge opportunity to be a transformational leader, but it's not by picking people like Matt Gaetz. It's not. This is to quote The Mandalorian. This is not the way.
Right. Absolutely. But Dana Perino pointed out how many crazy picks that Joe Biden had and turned out to be worse than we thought. Cut 22.
And I just want to point out a couple of other things. On Joe Biden named this woman, Tracy Stone Manning, to run the BLM. That's the Bureau of Land Management, Greg. She had direct ties to an eco-terrorist organization. Then, after the October 7th attack, he nominated a lifetime federal judgeship to a guy named Adil Manji, who had hosted anti-Semitic groups on campus and defended cop killers. He had Sam Britton.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
The luggage thief,
okay, to oversee nuclear waste disposal. Good thing he didn't steal any of that. I could go on and on, but the last one I would mention is Jen Granholm. She literally invested in EV battery companies while serving as the energy secretary of the country. So if you're going to be all up in arms about one nomination, just give Pete a chance. I think that he will do a great job.
So something worth pointing out. And lastly, President Biden's going to meet with President Xi. I'm wondering if President Trump gave him a message or if he asked for one to relay, because it's not a speculation. He's taking over. And number two, the president's going to name an envoy to Ukraine and to Ukraine to work on this peace initiative. Who should it be?
That's a really, really good question. First of all, if Trump wants to nominate Matt Gaetz to the Bureau of Land Management, I could support that as a compromise.
Go ahead.
But I don't think that Donald Trump needs Joe Biden to be his emissary to Xi Jinping. I think that he's probably already talked to Xi Jinping, and I think Xi Jinping understands Donald Trump pretty well, and that he's in for a new situation. I think also Donald Trump has an opportunity in Ukraine to do something that Teddy Roosevelt did with the Russo-Japanese War, which is to end a war and create a lasting peace that would be worthy of a Nobel Peace Prize. So I think the goal is to not just – there's a lot of people in his circle who hate Ukraine, who just want to throw Ukraine under the bus. I don't think Trump feels that way. I think he really likes Zelensky. I think he wants to do something that is lasting. This is an opportunity to do something on par with the Abraham Accords. And quite frankly, if he can do a lasting peace in Ukraine, combine that with more Abraham Accords in the Middle East, I think that it would be he truly could win a Nobel Peace Prize at some point, and certainly deserve it. So I'd like to see him do something that is lasting and successful and outlives his presidency.
However, if Barack Obama started a midnight basketball intramural league in Chicago,
yes,
he would get it first.
Yes,
over peace in the Middle East and Eastern Europe.
That is absolutely true.
So, Mark, outline how the president won. Mark breaks it down and talks about the 8 things that the Democrats did to pave the way for President Trump, who took advantage of a lot of it. And lastly, Mark, I know you communicate with the president. I communicated him a couple of times. I've just been watching him. I have never, ever seen him so happy.
Yeah. He seems joyful, which is what we were promised. We were promised joy. And I think we've got it.
Right. But the woman that promised us joy is going to Hawaii on vacation.
I hope she enjoys it. She's the new Michael Dukakis.
Right. So, I feel bad for J.D.
Naked
Vance.
Gun 2.5? You know the scene in Naked Gun 2.5 when Frank Drebin is in the blues bar, drowning his sorrows, and they pan across the pictures of the Hindenburg and the Titanic and the Chicago Fire and a big portrait of Michael Dukakis? If they did a remake today, Kamala Harris would be the picture in place of Michael Dukakis.
I love it. Absolutely. I just feel bad for J.D. Vance. The day one, he's going to have to get a floor plan out. He's going to have no idea where the kitchen is, the bathroom, because she's not going to be around to tour him through.
I know. It's very sad.
Well, Mark Thiessen, thanks so much.
Take care.
1-866-408-7669. When we come back, we'll find out if I indeed need to know more.
Remember to check out Brian's show, One Nation, Saturdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on Fox News Channel. If you already have plans, set up that DVR and watch when you get home. That's One Nation, Saturdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on Fox News Channel. Be there. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. I'm just looking around and thinking to myself, I think you need to know more.
More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
Well, Patrick Mahomes has broken a silence about when his house was broken into. Jason Kelce's too, by the way. While he was playing football, here's what he said yesterday.
You know, obviously, it's frustrating. Disappointing, but I can't get into too many of the details because the investigation is still ongoing, but obviously something that you don't want to happen to really anybody, but obviously yourself.
Were you or your family, were you guys home?
Yeah, I can't speak too much about the details of everything just with the investigation going on, but I'm sure at some point that will be talked about.
Meanwhile, he's got kids at home, he's got a 1-year-old, he's got a 2-year-old, his wife's pregnant. Kelce lost $20,000 in cash. Not good. Next, Cerritos High School teacher allegedly leaves class after a student wears a MAGA shirt. He was too offended. It was just a student wearing a T-shirt, probably for some joke, said a student, Sakura Padilla. But the 2024 race for the White House has got this guy down. That includes a MAGA clothing issue at Cerritos High School, according to a parent. The ABC Unified School District doesn't provide any specifics about the case, but said students can exercise their freedom of speech, but the teacher didn't find it funny. She allegedly posted a lengthy missive to her students, writing that it's unfair that students can wear political clothes in class. So she left. It's different when teachers become the it's different with teachers because the teachers are the ones who are there to do a job, says an attorney. The ABC Unified School District says we encourage our amazing educators to use real-life issues like the recent elections to teach people. How about that? You can't storm out of your classroom. Next. Working just one day a week slashes dementia by 25%. Man, I should never get dementia. It tracks over 10,000 students for 16 years, found that weekend warriors who exercise just once a week or twice per week had a 25% lower risk of developing mild dementia. The discovery could be particularly meaningful for busy working adults who struggle to find time to exercise. But if you want to, if you can remember, work out. Next, right to disconnect. 90% of workers want the law to save them from email anxiety, similar to the recent legislation in Australia. Now, it turns out EmailToolsTester.com surveyed 1,100 American adults about their relationship with workplace digital communications. The findings, a troubling picture of workforce tethered to their devices. 51% spend 3 hours or more managing their digital workplace correspondence, dedicated to 5 or more hours a day after work dealing with it. They say it's a psychological toll, and in Australia, you're not allowed to email after a certain hour. Well, you don't have to answer. I don't know how you stop people from emailing, but a Florida man who lost his U.S. Naval Academy class ring on a Pennsylvania golf course was reunited with the ring by a fellow golfer 54 years later. David Lorenzo said he lost his class of 1964 ring while golfing with his father at Uniontown Country Club. It survived combat, but it couldn't survive my golf game. Michael Zento was golfing in the same club when he spotted a shiny object in the clay that had been exposed by the recent rains near the fourth green. Congratulations. It must have been a great, great thing to see. And that's when now you know more. Patrick, you're in Wisconsin. Hey, Patrick.
Good morning or good afternoon, Brian.
You're happy that Pete Hegseth is Secretary of Defense nominee?
Oh, I'm thrilled. Mr. Pete came to our town about 6 years ago, and I consider myself a Republican.
And you like meeting him. He's a good guy. He does a lot. He did a lot of diners, too. I think he was the first one to do the diners. And meet the people. And he'll be definitely out and about. Brian Kilmeade Show.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown. Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.